to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse.
Hello again. This is Dr. Kenneth Logan, family practitioner doctor here in Chico, California, and this is The Doctor's Inn. On The Doctor's Inn, I do this show for an hour the third Thursday of every month from 6 to 7 in the evening, and I cover shows that involve subjects of medical and health interest to you, I hope. I'm interested in your input as to what you would like to hear me do a show on in medicine or health. And my email address is klogan.md@yahoo.com. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its board, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, the KZFR supporters, and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events by publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit friendsoftheart.net. And by Dahlmeier Insurance Agency, an independent agent and retail broker since 1948. Dahlmeier Insurance provides a range of coverage options from home and auto insurance to farm and ranch coverage. You can reach Dahlmeier Insurance in Chico at 342-6421 and in Orville at 533-3424 or at chicoinsurance.com. Okay, now today on The Doctor's Inn, I'm going to start by saying this. I want to thank, you, the listeners, to know that I prepare for these The Doctor's Inn radio programs. And when I do that, of course, it not only gives you some information to learn, hopefully, but it also helps me learn. And so I say thank you, KZFR, for helping me learn over the months and years that I've done this show and continue to do this show. So thank you, KZFR. Okay, on on today's show, what I'm going to do is, first of all, cover, let me give you a brief outline here. First of all, it's going to be breast cancer screening. And I don't want you to sleep through that because I think it's important information for all of us. Then you can go to sleep, maybe. Then I'll probably morph into some issues about Palestine. Because I am a doctor in the United States of America, and I'm going to give you a doctor's perspective on some of this. And then I'm also going to give you this doctor's perspective on the death penalty and some of the issues that have recently come up, for instance, in South Dakota recently. And then if I have time, I'm going to flow into some American Medical Association, or AMA, news blurbs, which I'll do a little intro about my actually pleasant feelings about the AMA over the last year or so. They've kind of turned a corner. Again, it's breast cancer screening. First of all, let's make sure that we're all on the same page about something. And what's that something? Here it is. Cancer sucks. It's not a good thing. It's a bad thing. Duh. For most cancers, it's not something that we, the people, have enormous knowledge about how to prevent them. Of course, there's some that we can, because some of them we have some prevention knowledge of, such as tobacco smoking and lung cancer. And by the way, with lung cancer being the number one killing cancer in humans. And Another one, the most common cancer of all, is actually a skin cancer called basal cell carcinoma. And we know that avoidance of prolonged direct sun exposure can help prevent that. And also to prevent that is sunscreen lotions. That's a prevention issue with that. But, for instance, the two other most common cancers otherwise are breast cancer in women and prostate cancer in men. And we don't have good knowledge, unfortunately, relative to how to prevent these. There's a bit of information relative to female hormone replacement therapy being a potential bad factor, possibly relative in increasing the likelihood of breast cancer in women, and a bit of information relative to male hormone replacement therapy in older men being possibly a factor of prostate cancer in men. However, on this show today, I'm not going to specifically speak about replacement hormone issues relative to cancer. Instead, what I'm going to talk about today mainly is breast cancer screening. And here's why. You'd say, why? What do you mean? Well, why am I going to talk about breast cancer screening today? Well, when we're talking about breast cancer, it's relative to cancers that are not a skin cancer. Breast cancer is the most common cancer in women, top of the list. And for this subject of the actual deaths from cancer, it's also the most common killer cancer in women. That's the first important point. The second important point is relative to a woman who happens to be surviving from breast cancer. That is, it did not kill her. If we want it to be a cancer that does not kill her, it's imperative that it be found early. So early detection, as early as possible, is imperative. That's a fact. It's not controversial. There's no question about it. Early detection is imperative. Therefore, we as a people, and me as a healthcare provider, our goal should be to find all breast cancer as early as possible. We as a people, we as a country, have many issues about which we're not okay with maybes or sometimes or kind ofs. And therefore, this is one of those subjects, early breast cancer detection, that should be one of those subjects that we're not okay with sometimes, kind of maybes. We should tackle it with gusto, I say. So, when I'm talking about breast cancer screening advice, I'm saying that it's my opinion that we attack this subject with the same minimum of the same gusto we speak out some of the other subjects in our lives. One undiagnosed case of breast cancer not diagnosed until it's too late and it's metastatic is one too many. It's not acceptable. If our goal is to detect any and all breast cancer before it's too late, that is, with early detection being the goal, then we should no way accept anything short of that goal. Hence, today, I'm talking about screening for breast cancer. I hope you've heard me and understood what I just said. Okay, let me say right now, relative to people, I'm just going to get this said because I almost forgot to bring this up, and that is relative to people who are transgender. If you're a person who is male to female and consequently via your hormone therapy have developed breast tissue that usually follows this hormone therapy, then it's best for you to follow breast cancer screening advice that's present for all women. That is, the screening advice for female general population. Also, if you're a transgender person who is female to male, you're also advised to follow the breast cancer screening advice for female general population, unless, of course, you've had bilateral complete mastectomy surgery, that is, all your breast tissue removed as part of your transgender path. Then you would not have to worry about that. Okay, So moving back to the issue of breast cancer screening in the general population, I have to lay out first the issue of breast cancer risk factors that have been identified. Now, risk factors mean, of course, those things in a woman's life that may possibly increase the likelihood for any specific woman to develop breast cancer throughout her life. I will now give you that list. However, ahead of that, I want to say this little fact, and that's, keep this in mind too. The majority of women who develop invasive breast cancer actually do not have one of those risk factors. However, if a woman does have one of those risk factors, it's true that, again, it does increase her likelihood for developing breast cancer. So, risk factors are important. But the most important thing to know is that beyond the issue of risk factors, breast cancer is common enough. It's common enough that it's the number one killer of cancer killer in women, regardless of these risk factors I'm going to list for you. I hope you understand this. Okay, so now I want to get this out of the way, and that's I'm going to tell you what the defined risk factors for developing breast cancer are, or at least they include. First, childhood chest radiation treatment for some medical problem as a child, such as leukemia or lymphoma or other medical condition that required chest radiation treatment when you were a child. That's one risk factor. The next, older age. In other words, the likelihood increases as age goes on. Now, that's something I'm going to talk about later in the show. The next risk factor to talk about is family history of breast cancer and or family history of ovarian cancer. Another risk factor is in some families that have breast cancer happening in their family, there are some genetic mutations called the BRCA or BRCA mutations. If you're one of those people who is positive for that gene mutation, you too, of course, or you would know this, of course, I hope, that you're at increased risk for breast cancer, and your breast cancer screening plan should be totally individualized for you, which I'm gonna talk about the individualization here in a minute. And then the last risk factor that I'm going to list here is significantly dense breasts. And that means the parts of the breast that are not the fat of the breast, but rather the other tissues in the breast, such as dense glandular or gland-like tissue or dense, what they call stromal tissue. Those ladies are a bit more increased in likelihood for breast cancer. So they, too, have different screening advice. Okay, so these women with one or more risk factor need an individualized breast screening plan established and carried out by your healthcare provider, which I'll be touching on to a degree later in the show. However, it's important for women to know that if they're one of the people with a risk factor in one of those risk factor groups, they need their own individualized plan for breast cancer screening throughout their life. It's not wise for them to go with the general population screening advice. They need their own individualized breast cancer screening plan. As I've been digging into this subject, I will say this. It's amazing to me how the breast cancer screening advice via medical establishments here in our country has been complicated by differing opinions by different medical establishments. And those establishments are such as American Cancer Society, the United States Preventative Service Task Force, the American Academy of Family Practice, the American College of Radiology, and the National Comprehensive Cancer Network. The sad aspect of this for me as a family practice doctor, and for me as a human being, and for me as a person who looks at how this confusion may be seen by you, the general public, is indeed that the advice relative to different aspects of breast cancer screening is, at least to a degree, somewhat helter-skelter for all of us. I'm not happy about that fact. So I say this right now relative to this cancer, breast cancer. Again, it's a common enough cancer, and it's certainly always a potential killer. Therefore, we as a people, that is the general public, and we as healthcare providers, need to be on the same page relative to the facts, indeed, that this cancer is fairly common, and that we have to be on the same page relative to the importance of early detection and the fact that it is in the utmost importance relative to tackling this cancer. And we have to be on the same page relative to the goal relative to this screening of this cancer. And that goal is that we do our best to lay out the groundwork, the empowerment, and the support for early detection to occur in every case of breast cancer that occurs. One case of late diagnosis being made is one case too many, not adequate. We have the technology to improve our detection rates if we do it, and if we do it in a united way. And united, I mean as the general public united, healthcare providers united, and with adequate, appropriate help and support from our government as needed. Again, there's many subjects in our day and age nowadays where, maybes and kind ofs and something sometimes are not tolerated. So we need to tackle this breast cancer early detection with the same gusto that we tackle some of the other problems in our lives, in our country, and in our society. That's partly why I get annoyed with us being in a confused state sometime about screening advice on this. I say that every woman in this country, if she stopped on the street and asked, hey, what's your plan for breast cancer screening? She rattles off her plan, possibly with her family's input if desired and with the appropriate assistance from her healthcare provider and government empowerment as needed with that as well. That's how I see this. That's the goal. Goal to be present here and accomplished with as much gusto as we do other issues. There you go. You heard that from me. Okay, so breast cancer screening. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to lay out ways of doing a few multiple ways of doing breast cancer screening. And it doesn't mean you just have one of these done. It's a mix and match of these in any individual. So the first one to talk about, the first two to talk about actually, are non-technology-based screening tests that unfortunately also have gotten somewhat controversial recently, I'm sad to say. But I'll tell you my opinion after I say what the first one is. Okay, self-breast exam. That is a woman being advised to know her own breasts. Who would think that's not a great idea? And an appropriate idea. Okay. Anyway, which means to keep track of whether or not they, as a woman, are seeing or feeling any changes that are persistent as time goes on in their life. Changes that are persistent. If you're still at an age where you're having menstrual periods, however, don't check your breasts. I mean, it's not a good idea to check your breasts when your hormone levels are high, which is in the middle of your cycle when you're ovulating. And those handful of days, 3 or 4 days before your period, those are another time, of course, that your hormone levels are high. Those are not the days to test your breasts because, you know, it's not uncommon for women's breasts to kind of get a little swollen and a little more lumpy-oid during that time. And you don't want to be, if you're doing this regular testing for seeing if there's persistent changes in your breasts, you need to examine them on times when your hormone levels are not high. In other words, not when you're ovulating and not when just before your period. And then, if there are persistent things that are different in how they look or what you feel in them, then it's time to talk to your healthcare provider about it. That's what your healthcare provider's for, things like that. Okay. The second breast cancer screening thing, also a non-technology-based screening, and also one that's unfortunately somewhat controversial now, if you can believe it or not, is the clinical breast exam. That is, a woman having her health care provider, either her primary care provider or her OBGYN provider or other health care provider, examine her breasts on a yearly basis if, say, she's my feeling is, this is my opinion, probably around the age of 30 and older. That's how, that's how I was trained. There are medical establishments, however, who are now are saying that it's not something we should be advising our patients to do any longer. Can you believe that? I, for one, still feel that it's advisable to have your healthcare professional, whether it's your primary care, your OBGYN, or some other healthcare professional, examine your breasts yearly. And, of course, also, when or if there's any persistent changes that you and go and talk to them about, starting at about the age of 30. Okay, the third thing for screening for breast cancer, early detection, is something I'm sure you've all heard of, and that's the mammogram. This is a specialized X-ray procedure to examine the breasts. Okay, the X-ray quantity into the human has been honed in and decreased over the last, since I've been in this business, certainly for the last, of course, 39 years. So they've gotten less relative to overall X-ray exposure, thank goodness. But nonetheless, there is X-ray. This is an X-ray. But for the general population, by the way, before I finish this one about mammograms, we don't have the perfect method of early detection. It's a mix and match of these methods. I wish we had the perfect method. It doesn't exist. But we have to mix and match these other factors, and it's important to do so. These other testings, we have to mix and match them. All right. So for the general population of women, that is the women who do not have specific breast cancer risk factors, because they, again, need their own individualized plan. But the rest of the people, mammograms are another area that's a bit controversial relative to the age to begin mammograms and the frequency of them to occur as time goes on. It's controversial nowadays. I, at this time, anyway, am saying that I think it's best to begin mammogram breast cancer screening around the age of 40, and at that time to have it every 2 years during your 40s. And again, this is not if you're a general population and don't have any specific risk factors. So every 2 years or so in your 40s, and then once you get around 50, it's time, I say, I'm still on the page of having annual mammograms screenings. That is every year until around the age of 75 or so. After the age of 75 or so, that's another point where there's various opinions, but here's how I say it. I favor the arrangement of you speaking with your family members, if you want their input, and speaking with your healthcare provider about when and how often to have your screening mammograms done, from then and the rest of your life, to update that discussion for the rest of your life. Every year or so, update that discussion with your healthcare provider and your family, if you choose to bring your family into it. I favor screening mammograms until you're entering your 80s, unless there's some other reason to not have it done. As far as the issue of what age to stop having screening mammograms, I say that too is an issue discussed with your healthcare provider and your family if you desire. And it needs to be decided on an individual basis. And I'm telling you, medical establishments have various opinions like, oh, you stop at 75. Oh, you stop at 80. Oh, you stop at this number. Nope. Forget all that. I say, because we're all different. Every woman is different. She needs to, after 75 or so, she needs to think what she wants. She needs to maybe bring her family into it if that would be helpful for her. And she needs to speak with her healthcare provider every year about what her plan, every year, what her plan is for breast cancer screening or not. Individualized. Okay. The next technology for breast cancer screening is MRI, so magnetic resonance imaging, which we do in all areas of the body, but included in that can be the breasts. So this, too, is an area of controversy, partly, I think, because of the cost. But also, so MRIs often are part of the testing done on women who have breast cancer and now being followed more closely for the rest of their life. They're having mammograms, hands-on exam, and MRIs as they're followed for the rest of their life if they're a survivor of breast cancer. But for the general public, it seems as though MRIs can give additional screening information for women. However, I must say that I was a bit saddened that the great wowie increased accuracy of MRIs for breast cancer screening. I was a little disappointed in the reading I did, but nonetheless, it's an additional way, additional information compared to mammograms. Mammograms are good. MRIs going to give you different information. So I think, and if I had my way, I'd say everything that I just said about mammogram frequency and how often and all that, I would add and MRI if I had my way. Remember, early detection is key. It's the number one killer, cancer in women. We're a technologically well-endowed country. This needs to be part of the screening. That's my opinion. Breast ultrasound, that's the next one. It's where they do testing of the breasts using sound waves being precisely bounced off the breast tissue externally to obtain additional information, different type of information relative to the makeup of breast tissue, especially from the standpoint of fluid presence, such as if there's a lump, an ultrasound can help determine if that's actually a fluid-filled cyst or a partially fluid-filled cyst and partially tissue-filled thing. So it can give some additional information. It's not used generally as a screening device or technique or test unless a woman has significantly dense breasts. Then, it's my opinion, it probably should be part of the regular breast cancer screening modality along with mammogram. That's ultrasound in women. That's my opinion. And this is in women with significantly dense breast tissue breasts. The final breast cancer detection technology is what's called the digital breast tomosynthesis. Digital breast tomosynthesis, or some people call it the 3D mammography. It, too, is a specialized X-ray with a computer putting the information into somewhat of a 3D-type visualization. Now, I don't know much about it, but it seems to me that it's more likely to be utilized, and I've seen it utilized in people evaluating breasts of women with significantly dense breast tissue. Otherwise, I think it's felt to. I don't think it's part to generally be part of what would be advised for a woman on breast cancer screening. Again, sometimes it's used in screening in women with significantly dense breasts. However, how this additional approach of the 3D mammograms, and it's not really 3D; it's 3D-like. How that sorts out in the future relative to potential screening for us or for women is something, of course, I don't know about either. So now let's take a little break. And who are we going to listen to? We're going to listen to the Rolling Stones, Dear Doctor, and I'm going to come back with the next part of the show.
It's Thursday, time for the Chico News and Review, local news and arts from Butte County's community newspaper.
Okay.
Dear Doctor, take one, right.
One, two, three, one, two.
Oh, help me, please, Doctor, I'm damaged.
touched. There's a pain where there once was a heart. It's sleeping, it's beating. Can't you please take it out and preserve it right there in that jar? Oh, help me, please, Mama, I'm sickening. It's today, that's the day I've to plunge. Oh, the gal I'm to marry is a bow-legged sow. I've been soaking a drink like a sponge. Don't you worry, get dressed, cry my mother. As you fly me with bourbon so sour. Pull your socks up, put your suit on, comb your long hair down. For you will be wet in the hour. Oh, help me, please, doctor.
Hello, this is Ken Logan again, family practitioner in the Doctor's Inn. You're listening to KZFR 90.1 FM. Let me tell you now, the last few months I've been, of course, doing COVID stuff, and I'm gonna have a little bit of COVID stuff right now, but I'm doing less COVID today. But I want to, as of yesterday, relative to COVID in our area and in Low Hospital, as of yesterday anyway, the 19th of May, Inlow Hospital had only, which is a small number relative to prior, five COVID-related disease patients. So it's been coming down, and that's good. Remember that... when I talked to, anyway, I don't have to tell you who I'm talking to about it, but the two things that are important relative to this virus, COVID virus, in our community, our country, and the world is prevention. The second most important thing is prevention. The third most important thing is, guess what? Prevention. And the two general categories of how to accomplish prevention are prevent contact with someone who has the COVID. So, hence the masking, the social distancing, and the avoiding crowds. And as of today, it's my opinion that we continue with that. I know this is a changing phenomenon. It's in a state of flux, but let's not be stupid. Let's remember this is a tricky virus. We need to all keep playing nice. We're not quite ready for giving up on it all yet. No, we're not. So then the second most important thing to do relative to prevention is vaccinations. That's the only way, of course, you all know this, that we're going to get out from under this is with us, as many as possible of us, getting vaccinated. And let me look and see where we're at relative to that. Let's see if I have some numbers. I don't have numbers on numbers of percentage of us who are vaccinated. Did I write that down? Let's see. Looks like I didn't. But it's important to get yourself vaccinated, and remember the vaccines available now are Pfizer and Moderna. Both are two-shot series, low in side effects, I'm telling you. High in efficacy, they work good. The one-shot thing is Johnson & Johnson. It went through some controversy to the blood clot thing, which I'm going to talk about. I'm going to give some numbers on it in a few minutes. But The vast majority, overwhelmingly so, do well with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine as well. Okay. That's all on COVID for right now. Again, I'm going to touch a little bit of base on that, on a couple other things, you know, including that, what the number of identified cases of blood clots with Johnson & Johnson is lately. But now I'm going to go off on something else right now. And this is opinion. This is part of my show that is opinion right now. Starting out, I am an American physician and have been, of course, for a few years, 39 years. Okay, first subject. The Netanyahu government of Israel and their treatment of Palestinians is cruel and inhumane. Starting on that is, and this is a medical show, the first subject, cruel and inhumane to other human beings, is the Palestinians' availability for the COVID virus vaccine. Their lands that are occupied and their other land where they are, other part of their land where they are inhibited in commerce and movement in and out, etc. Inhibited in oh so many ways by the occupational country. That's Israel. COVID vaccine, the number of people getting the COVID vaccine in Israel, the state of Israel, country of Israel itself, is very good. The number of percentage of patients or people in the occupied places that Israel occupies in Palestine are not good. That is unconscionable, inappropriate, and is, as an American physician, I'm saying it should not be tolerated. Period. The second point relative to the Netanyahu government being with cruelty and inhumane acts have to do with this recent flare-up of fighting Israel and Palestine. The massive arsenal, think about this as an American, the massive arsenal that they have and that Israel has relative to their killing of civilians, children, elderly, females, civilian infrastructure, is largely by the United States weaponry. They are they're the country in the world that has the most weapons and aid from us monetarily. We supply them with their killing machines, and they use them in a way that's unbelievable to me, against this occupied country and people that they have done. Anyway, as American physician, I say this is inappropriate. We as American people should not be part of this. We should end it. We should end our supplying of the Israel government with weapons and funds until they are humane relative to other human beings and treat Palestinians as equal human beings, as they should. That's what we as Americans would say. Yes? All right. Thank you for listening to that. Another opinion by this American physician, Dr. Ken Logan. It has to do with the death penalty. Present in certain parts of the United States of America. I, as a physician, took an oath when I was sworn in as a doctor. I mean, not really sworn in, but we do take an oath. Part of it said, first, do no harm. And yet, as an American citizen, our government in some parts of this country, or the governments in some parts of this country, kill other American citizens with intention. So murder, either by a civilian population or by our government or any government in the United States, of our own citizens, of course, is wrong, it's cruel, and it's inhumane. It's not appropriate, it's inappropriate, should not be allowed, it should be outlawed, it's absurd. I'm an American physician. First, do no harm is my life, and I am not in favor of murder, whether it be a civilian against a civilian, or be it a government employee or a contractor from the government paid to kill another American citizen. In other words, what we call the death penalty. It's inappropriate. The second point about the death penalty function has to do with the fact that in South Carolina they just passed a bill that those people on death row in South Carolina can get a choice of the electric chair versus the firing squad, because some of the states still use the firing squad. Well, both those methods, electric chair killing or firing squad killing, are both cruel and inhumane. That's inappropriate in my mind. But as a physician, I also know, we physicians also know, that it's certainly potentially harmful to the shooters, the people that we that are contracted to do the killing, as we all know, or should know. It's common sense. As a physician, I know this. Emotional trauma in the life of the shooters they're at high risk for emotional trauma later on in their life, for sure. So this is a fact. That's a second little side reason why firing squad is inappropriate. It's a harmer. It kills somebody, but it's also a harmer of the people we contract and ask to do the shooting. That's not right. I'm a physician. That's damaging to the shooters as well. That's not right. The third thing, the array of killings, mass shootings in the United States. We, as a people, are doing the best. We want to do, I suspect all citizens in this country, want to do the best we can to decrease or stop the likelihood of any mass shooter from doing shooting of people here in the United States. That's a no-brainer. So, we want to do our best. So, it should not be a government function to shoot another American citizen by law, to shoot them as a death penalty. That is the exact opposite of the milieu or the sense of our nation should not include the shooting of other by the government, shooting of other American citizens by request intentionally. We should be the opposite. We should not, in any way, shape, or form, promote gun shooting to kill other people. It's not it's just the wrong thing to put out into the mix of humans in this country. So think about it. Anyway, that's my opinion there. I'd go on and on, but I have to control myself a little bit here. Okay. Now I want to do a little. The American Medical Association has become much more clinical and appropriate in their information they put out, and just the way they are in the medical world over the last handful, 2-3 years. I think I'm not a member of the American Medical Association, but I've just noticed the last two presidents, the recent president and the current president, hey, them are good doctors, I'm saying. Anyway, I get the American, I don't ask for this, but the American Medical Association sends me these little news blurb updates on my email address every few days. And I'm going to read some for you because I think it's stuff we ought to share. First one is, as you know, this was on the 14th, so 6 days ago, they stated, as you may all know, that COVID vaccine now is approved, the Pfizer one, for children 12 to 15 years of age. And the 16 years and older is already approved for Moderna and Pfizer. So that's a good thing, I say. The next thing on that same day of information from the AMA, the Biden administration announced a $7.4 billion to hire more public health workers to help deal with the COVID virus pandemic and for the future and for any future crises. So that $7.4 billion for that, more public health workers, good thinking. And that's part of the $1.9 trillion COVID virus relief package that Congress passed in March, this past March, which also is including $500 million for hiring additional school nurses. Now, that's probably not enough, but at least that's a step in the right direction relative to hiring more school nurses, which is a place that's sorely needed to have more nurses. I've watched that happen over the last 35 years as well, where the money and availability of school nurses has gone down, and it's inappropriate. I work with school nurses some. Okay, the next one. Some Congress members have put forth a bill recently to help streamline the prior authorization headaches and roadblocks that we doctors have, we healthcare providers have, relative to obtaining various elements of care for our patients with Medicare Advantage private health insurance plans. So I was happy to hear that. And then, here's one about COVID vaccine and pregnancy and breastfeeding. So on the information is growing relative to COVID vaccine's effect and safety in pregnant and lactating, that is breastfeeding, women. On a JAMA, Journal of American Medical Association article, apparently on the 13th of this month, found, quote-unquote, robust immune response in pregnant women and breastfeeding women, and that was those receiving the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines. And the antibodies were found to be passed to the fetus and the breastfeeding children. Safety studies so far are finding no specific problems identified in the pregnancy, pregnant women breastfeeding or the babies. However, these studies are new and early and are ongoing. We need to know that. On that day, the 14th, COVID deaths in the U.S. were currently averaging around 600 deaths per day, which is a significant improvement. This rare blood clot thing with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, I think it was mainly in women, but according to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, they're currently stating or showing that 28 cases of this blood clot thing out of, get this, the massive number, 28 out of this massive number of people so far have received the Johnson & Johnson, 28 cases out of 8.7 million people receiving the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. I hope you know that that's a minuscule number. I hope you also know the dangerousness of the COVID virus and the you know, half a million or more than half a million deaths that we have in this country from that. And then, let me do a little more. Let me go on another day of the American Medical Association news blurb from the 17th, so 3 days ago. here's a neat one. President Biden revoked a 2019 proclamation that had been from the Trump administration that proclamation that was preventing immigrants from immigrants to this country from obtaining visas unless they had financial means to obtain or pay for medical care here, or did not already have purchased health insurance coverage from what turns out to be a restrictive list of qualifying plans. Well, President Biden is now revoking that, so not making it necessary for anyone, you know, for whatever reason they are needing to get away from their other country and immigrate to the United States, we're not holding them hostage by saying, you got to have some money, pay for health care, or you got to already have a health insurance plan. he's saying no. I agree with him on that. Another one from that same day, the American Medical Association news. Epidemiologists concerns in the U.S. relative to COVID virus. In order for us to have resume most activities safely, will require at least 70%. You've probably heard this: 70% of our full population to be fully vaccinated. So we got to get more of us. We got to get more of us vaccinated. And then here's another one. A study on aspirin use. Aspirin use, you know, it used to be more common advice to take an aspirin a day, including even the baby aspirin, the 81 milligram aspirin a day, to help prevent stroke and heart attack in we humans. Well, and that kind of got poo-pooed here over the last couple of years. But now, a study on aspirin use in patients who have heart disease found that a regular strength, which is 325 milligram one aspirin a day, or the small dose, 81 milligram one aspirin a day, were both found to be equally to be safe and effective, helpful, that is, in preventing additional heart problems and strokes. That's good for you and me to know. I take an aspirin a day, by the way. Oh, I didn't need to tell you that. Okay, here's one more. Daily probiotic use correlated with a reduction in upper respiratory tract infections and symptoms among people who are overweight. So that was an interesting one. I'm not sure what that means, but that's a benefit of probiotics, which are, you know, preparations of body-friendly, bowel-friendly, and helpful bacteria that people can take as a supplement daily. And in overweight people, it seemed to help reduce their presence of upper respiratory tract infections. I could surmise why that might be. We don't know why that is, but I wanted to tell you that fact. Then on 2 days ago, the 18th, the same AMA news blurb talked about a study in Boston area looked at older men or elderly men relative to short-term exposure to polluted air and its effect on those men's mental abilities via something called a mini mental state exam compared to at times when the air was less polluted. There were found to be elements of mental ability deficits or decreasedness during the more polluted air days. So more polluted air, more mental decreasedness abilities in these elderly men that were studied. Even during polluted days that were felt to be generally, more polluted days that were felt to generally be quote-unquote acceptable. So polluted air, us breathing, here's a no-brainer. Might be problems from that. Well, one of them could be, at least in elderly men, maybe others. Hey, can't think is good. All right. Let me think of, let me give you at least, do I want to do one more? Here's one. This is actually a different publication. This is called Public Health from the AMA. The FDA has announced it will work to ban menthol flavoring in cigarettes and all flavoring in cigars. It follows a lawsuit filed last year by the African American Tobacco Control Leadership Council, the action on smoking and health, and the AMA and the National Medical Association. And the president of the AMA said, for too long, tobacco companies have been enabled to promote menthol cigarettes to the black community, preying particularly on black youth. We urge the FDA to move swiftly to implement this ban and remove the harmful products from the market without further delay. We will continue to support the policies and initiatives to keep tobacco products out of the hands of our nation's youth to protect their health and well-being. See, that kind of statement from the AMA president, man, a few years ago, that would have never happened. I'm very proud of those physicians, this president and the one of the AMA and the one last year, too. Tobacco is the leading cause of preventable death worldwide. Canada and the European Union and other countries already banned menthol flavored cigarettes. Okay. Well, I've just wound down the Doctor's Inn for May 20th, 2021. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Alternative Energy Systems, providing sustainable energy for life. Alternative Energy Systems offers solar, battery storage, and whole home generator solutions. More information at 345-6980 or visit savingenergyforlife.com. And and another underwriter of the Doctor's Inn is Feather River Recreation and Park District in Orville, enriching lives through parks and recreation. The district is currently offering licensed preschool care, gymnastics programs, martial arts and fitness classes. And for details, visit FRRPD. So, you know, that's for Feather River Recreation and Park District. So FRRPD.com or 530-533-2012. You got to know that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. I hope you listen to the Doctor's Inn the third Thursday of the month, next month, from 6 to 7 in the evening. And now we're going to flow into a little music before the next show. What is the next show?
Planetary Radio.
Planetary Radio coming up next. Planetary Radio. Cool. Okay, so listen to Dr. Wu by Steely Dan.
Katie tried. I was halfway crucified. I was on the other side. And my life began again. Just when I'd spent the last piastre I could borrow.